Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/Stu does America. Be sure to hit subscribe and the bell for notifications. Christian Toto is here to discuss the wisdom behind the words of Jennifer Lawrence. We're also going to look at the latest in a government shutdown brought to you by the Democrats of America. But we're going to start by doing the odds of socialism. What are the chances? What could possibly go wrong? Just a quick reminder when you're going out into the voting booth, wherever you're going in America this week, try not to vote for socialism. Usually happens with socialism is millions of people die. Usually the result of it. In fact, if you look at the Black Book of Communism, we've got about 100 million dead over the past century or so. You know, give or take, a few million here, a few million there, right? Who knows exactly what the number is, but it's around that number. Try not to vote for it. Of course, New York not listening to these warnings at all. Democratic socialist Zohran Mamdani shoots to stardom, quote, like a young Obama. And now, I should be clear. I have producers who look at this every day, and they try to give me pop culture references so this stuff makes sense to you. And I just want you to know, my producer today handed me this. It's the poster for Like Mike. And the point here is they're trying to be like Barack Obama, just like the kid from Jerry Maguire was going to be like Michael Jordan from the Like Mike movie because he wore Michael Jordan's shoes or something. Also, in the background, we have what? Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, Allen Iverson, and Chris Webber? A cast of that, but not Michael Jordan? Was Michael Jordan not in the movie? I don't know. Now I want to go back and look at it, to be honest. I started this as a critique, and now I just want to watch Like Mike. I'm sure it was a great movie. They're trying to do something here, though, right? And both sides are trying to get something out of this little relationship. Obama is kind of uniquely positioned in the middle of all of this, this socialism versus respectable Democrat battle. And, you know, the socialists think he was too conservative. The conservative Democrats or moderate Democrats think he was too liberal. He's kind of sitting right in the middle of that with incredible popularity. We looked at a poll that was from earlier this year, had Barack Obama among Democrats at a 96% approval rating, 96-4. That's more popular than Trump is among Republicans. That's why he's out there. That's why people want him campaigning for him. And of course, what Obama wants out of this is, of course, some level of control, but also to try to rein in, to try to figure, not to rein in his Mamdani's policy goals, because they're the same, but to rein in the things that he says, the stuff that he admits, the quiet part he says out loud. It's not something that you want if you're Barack Obama. He went to great lengths to try to hide that, even quoting Ronald Reagan in speeches at times. It was Mamdani who, for a long time, went the opposite route. But Obama now showering praise on him. Obama calls Mamdani to praise his campaign and offers to be a sounding board. He wants to be involved, wants to be in the room, wants to make sure he's trying to control that from the inside. Mr. Obama says that he is invested in Mr. Mamdani's success beyond the election on Tuesday. They talked about the challenges of staffing a new administration and building an apparatus capable of delivering on Mamdani's agenda of affordability in the city, the people said. Now, that is not his agenda. To be clear, he's saying his agenda is affordability. The hell that is, because you don't just, you know, I was listening to a clip and they were like, it was a woman who was struggling with finances. And they said, hey, do you think the government is doing anything to bring grocery prices down? And she said, no, because if they were, they'd be coming down. That's the misunderstanding. That's the thing. This should set off alarm bells if you're a conservative. That's how people think. What do you mean? The government, when they try to do these things, they always fail. They always make it worse. That is the actual truth of the situation. But too many people think like this woman did, which is like, oh, gosh, they're not doing anything for me. Because if they were, it would be working. No, they try all the time and it never works. That's the actual truth. And of course, this is a lesson that New York is going to learn very soon. Former president's outreach on the eve of what has been a contentious election is notable given how divided the Democratic establishment has been over Mr. Mamdani and a role that Mr. Obama still plays in the party. I will say the reason why they're embracing Mamdani now is not necessarily because they love his approach. It's because they know he's going to win. Right? They look at this and they say, OK, he's got this thing won. We can either fight him to the death, right? Like, and this happened with Trump, right? When Trump had this idea, he was going to, when, you know, he won the primary and it looked like he was going to win the primary or win the election. You know, a lot, there was two different approaches on the right. Some said, look, I'm going to keep speaking up against Donald Trump because I don't like what he stands for. And those people obviously were not invited into the party when Trump was put into the president. There are people who are, I mean, there are people that I know of right now that are not big fans of Donald Trump's policies, but are in the administration right now. This is not, it's not like I have secret knowledge. These are people who this stuff has been widely discussed. And, you know, they'll take an approach of, look, there's a lot that Donald Trump does that's really good. Let's support him on that stuff. Let's try to push back behind the scenes to see if we can control the worst aspects of Donald Trump's instincts, if we think that's what they are. And, you know, that's a little different than the first term, which was more aggressive. I think there was some subversion going on, which, by the way, whether you like Donald Trump's policies or not, is actually illegal and against our constitutional principles. You can't do that to a president. You shouldn't be subverting a president of the United States when you're supposed to be working for him. But that's a whole another situation. Now, Gen Z is coming out in droves for Mamdani. Early voting is suggesting 117,000 adults, 18 to 29, have cast ballots in the election, or 16% of the vote share. As this demographic is expected to vote for Mamdani, the progressive candidate, and proportion of young people who have voted is higher than in previous elections, the data suggests these young people are coming out in droves to cement their support for Mamdani. I mean, look, everything points to Mamdani here. Mamdani, you know, look, he's a terrible guy. We can say that about him. We can say his beliefs are horrid and will hurt the country, will hurt the city, will hurt the people in the city. God only knows. I mean, and that's the nicest thing you could say he wants to do to Jews is just hurt them. All that being said, he's a pretty good candidate. When you know, there's two ways to look at a candidate, right? You can look at their policies. And a lot of times I think when you're doing analysis of elections, and you know, this has been my shtick here for a very long time, you look at these races. And a lot of times I think people say, well, he's saying what's true about the minimum wage or tax decreases. And therefore, he won that debate. But that's not how voters see it. They see it like a sport. You know, one of the, and I don't want to bring up sports after the horrific Game 7 situation that happened in a catastrophic heartbreak that I had over the weekend for my America's team, Toronto Blue Jays. That being said, like, that's what sports are for. Like, I sat in front of that television and screamed and yelled at the TV in elation and then just depression. And it allowed me to release those very human emotions in a scenario that, look, it's a sport. It's not life or death. It feels like it, but you're manufacturing that as part of something that you care about. That's what sports are really good for. There's movies are like that too, right? You're feeling fear, right, in a horror movie, or you're feeling passion in a movie. You're looking at these things and you're living through music the same way. Like, it's a way to experience all those emotions, which are an important part of life, without it delving into a political sense where people wind up killing each other. And what winds up happening a lot of times is people use politics as their sport. And so when they get really mad when their team loses, and, you know, as we've noted recently, some people get shot over it. This is not a good thing. It's not a good way of handling these situations. And, you know, that's why a lot of times when you look at this, it's easy to get caught up in the policies, which is, of course, the more important situation. Barack Mamdani has horrible, horrible, horrible policies. They will hurt our country. They will hurt the city. They will hurt the people of the city. But the way he's presenting it is just, you know, smiles. He smiles. He's laughing. He's hanging out with people. He's walking. He's walking around the people. He's being cool. And I think a lot of people see this and are like, well, you know, I mean, especially when there's not really even a distinction. I mean, there's not much of a distinction between him and Andrew Cuomo. And, you know, I will say as a candidate, he's done this pretty well. He's put a very good face on socialism to try to win this election. And so far it has worked. If you look at, you might say, oh, well, wasn't he saying all these terrible things about Jews? Wasn't he telling all these, you know, he's saying defund the police and all these things that are not good politics. That's all true. It was also almost exclusively before he started really running as a serious candidate. Once he certainly won the primary, he has tried to be buttoned up as much as possible. He has, and he said some stuff that certainly you and I might find offensive. But the question is, does an Andrew Cuomo voter find it offensive? And very little that he's said since he's been election has fallen into that category. And he's been, of course, with the assistance, the dutiful assistance of the media, has been able to say things like, well, I haven't taken a position on that yet, and get away with it, a debate, right? He's been able to say, well, no, I don't feel that way anymore about positions that he's taken that have 10% popularity. That's worked for him. And, you know, that is probably going to lead him to victory. Now, the question is he going to be the face of the party? I think the answer to that is the Democrats don't actually want that. They don't. They like his package. They like the fact that he, you know, can come out and he's packaged as a very, happy-go-lucky candidate that's saying important things about affordability. But they do not want this to happen. What conservatives need to do, if Mamdani does win, is to step back and say, holy crap, that's the face of the party. That's who we're running against. You know, the guy you're saying is a moderate in that swing state election? Actually, he's Mamdani. And that will be true more often than it is not. And it is something that will be very successful with voters outside of these five boroughs. So that is a big situation. Now, Bernie, of course, wanted to be leader of the Republicans or Democrats, but he was in a totally different mindset. And AOC wanted to take that banner as well. But she's the same package. You know, she's younger and she's female. And some would say she's better looking, though I find Bernie to be quite attractive. But Bernie was the guy who just said it. He said it in a dour way. He's always screaming about millionaires and billionaires. But so is AOC. That's not really the thing you're getting from Mamdani right now. And so far, it is it's working pretty well for him. The left is desperately going to try to connect these elections to Donald Trump. The right is going to try to say, hey, if Mamdani wins, this is the future of the Democratic Party. Is this what you want? And most Americans will probably say no. Now, the problem with this election, of course, this will be prime time for a business-friendly Democrat to win in New York. Like, if you think of, like, a Howard Schultz type, right? A guy who started Starbucks. He's not in New York, but, like, that type of person who, you know, started a big company, certainly believes at some level in big business, but also is somewhat sane in comparison to a Mamdani. That would have been a really good formula to run here. The problem, of course, being that Andrew Cuomo was involved, so he ruined everything. This is what Andrew Cuomo does. He ruins everything he touches. He decided to stay in the race, not even giving Curtis Sliwa a chance to try to win. So now it's been basically a cluster since the beginning. And why does he do this? Well, usually the answer with Andrew Cuomo is he's trying to enrich himself in some way, whether it's with power, whether it's with money, who knows. Cuomo earned almost $5 million in consulting, but he won't name his clients, which is fascinating. $4,712,978, the exact amount, from Innovation Strategies, a pass-through company created for his consulting work before he ran for mayor. Isn't that weird that you'd need a pass-through company? Would you be proud for your lobbying work? Would you be proud for your consulting work? No. Instead, he decided just to run away with it and not tell anybody. And people were like, oh, gosh, what's he going to do with his life? This is what he's going to do. He's going to bilk people that he's promising favors to. And this is one of the things, because I really don't have much sympathy for New York, frankly, in this moment. Now, I'm a New Yorker. I was born in New York. But I have very little sympathy for New York City. They were the ones that picked Mamdani. They were the ones that showed Cuomo that he has a chance of winning, which helped him in the race. They're the ones that are ignoring Curtis Sliwa, who's been just a good guy who likes the city and should be the next mayor, frankly. He'd be the best one. I don't really care, honestly, who wins out of Cuomo or Mamdani. I think they both suck, and they both do incredible damage to the city. It'll be worse than it is now because of these two people. That being said, the reason I have some understanding of those who want Cuomo and are really rooting for Cuomo is Cuomo does have something that's different than Mamdani. Mamdani is an ideological socialist slash liberal, right? Cuomo's also a liberal. He very much cares about liberalism, but he cares about something much, much more than liberalism, which is Cuomo. Cuomo cares about Cuomo and his pocketbook a heck of a lot more than he cares about socialism. So some of his corruption may align with policies that are not harmful to the city. And that is a real advantage when you're living there, right? Like you'd say, well, I don't want there to be corruption in the mayor's office. And that's understandable. It's your best bet with Andrew Cuomo. Like, if you think you want to have, a park in a particular area and think it's going to improve your life, your best bet is that someone who's building the park or is going to profit off of that park will also kick some of that cash over to Andrew Cuomo or some similar arrangement, something that will make Andrew Cuomo better off. At times, those things might align with things that you like. If you want a new train over here, you want more bus service over here, who knows what it could be? You want your union to get more jobs. There's a lot of things that could happen. Anything that corruption can buy might occur during a Cuomo administration. So, you know, there are going to be occasional points where he looks a little bit better than Mamdani. I don't think he is much better than Mamdani. He's pretty terrible. Anyway, let's get to some of this. We have so much to get through here. I'm running way too long here. Here is the mayoral election. This is from Kalshi, the prediction market. Let's go through some of these. Has it as Mamdani with a 93% chance of winning, Andrew Cuomo at 7%, and Curtis Sliwa at 1%. I clicked on the Sliwa thing just to see what the situation was earlier today. You can theoretically vote no on Sliwa at 1% and earn 1% on your money in a couple of days, which, you know, hey, nothing wrong with that in a prediction market. And 1%, certainly better. You're getting like 1% for a year at a bank, 1% for a day. Curtis Sliwa probably not going to win. But there weren't even any shares to wager on. You couldn't even take the no side of the Sliwa argument because no one was betting yes. So that's where we are with Sliwa, in case you had any hope on that one. Really, really unlikely. 7%, probably I think it's honestly a little bit high for Cuomo, but that's where he is right now. Now we go over to Spanberger and Sears in Virginia, or Earl Sears, I suppose, is the way you're supposed to say that. Also, the attorney general race, that's up. Let me give you a couple of details on that. Spanberger leads Winsome Earl Sears 55-44, according to an Emerson College a poll that just came out. Then we have Jay Jones and Mayaris. This is where you might see some good news. 49-47 has Jay Jones up in that poll. That is the sort of outlier. It seems that Jay Jones has been behind in most of these polls recently. But you got to remember what the circumstances. This is a light blue state in a state that's, I think, minus 16 to minus 20 on Donald Trump. They're not Trump fans. They don't see this presidency as a success so far, as you might. So they're looking at this and saying, oh, gosh, I don't want another Republican, even though their Republican in the state is actually pretty popular. So that is it's a weird dynamic. Sometimes the national situation overwhelms the local situation. We will see if that's the case. Some of the prediction markets on this, predict it has Spanberger at 97% chance to win. That one is very likely. The prediction markets on Jones and Mayaris are very are different and are kind of all over the board, actually. Kalshi has Mayaris as a 60% chance of winning. Predict it has it as a 54% chance, and on Polymarket, it's a 57% chance. So very slight favorites for Mayaris in this election. Again, he should win. He's done a good job. It's hard to explain why people think the way that they do, I suppose. Democrats are racing to boost Mikey Sherrill in the tight New Jersey governor's race. This polling is actually really legitimately close. Number of high-profile Democrats, including former President Obama, are racing to shore up support for New Jersey gubernatorial candidate Mikey Sherrill, among signs that the race is tightening even more than expected. I will say, in this environment, I would expect New Jersey to not go for a Republican. Titorelli seems to be pretty popular there. One of the things that's interesting about this race is it is closer than what the polling showed in 2024, and Donald Trump outperformed that polling. Now, that doesn't mean every Republican outperforms their polling. Donald Trump has a way of doing that, and he's been showing that for multiple elections now. But it is, I will say, closer than I would have expected in this particular environment. Inside the numbers in the New Jersey governor's race, let me give you a bunch of polls here. Quinnipiac has Sherrill ahead, 51-43. Another Quinnipiac poll had it 50-44 with independents, with Citarelli at 47-44. Suffolk poll came out. It's a 46-42. Sherrill with a lead. Emerson has a poll out as well, basically a tie. 49 for Mikey Sherrill, the Democrat, 48 for Citarelli, the Republican. So those are right in the margin of error. So what do the prediction markets say? Well, they're pretty much thinking that Mikey Sherrill is the considerable favorite at 85%, according to Kalshi right now. Predicted has it as 80% chance of winning for Sherrill and an 88% from Polymarket. This is one of those things where, look, these markets don't tell you the future. They can help you understand what the future may hold. What they do tell you is what people actually believe. And I think that's the way that I really love prediction markets, for cutting through to the truth. It's not necessarily that these predict the future. What they do, and there, by the way, is good data to show that their predictions are largely accurate toward the future, but that's not what they're doing. What they're doing is telling you what people actually think. It is a perfect representation of what people think, because if it wasn't perfect, then people would come in and buy and turn it the other way. This is a pretty, these markets are pretty liquid. Some of the predicted ones aren't as much anymore, but the other ones are very, very liquid markets. I think Kalshi did $4 billion in volume this month alone. So we're talking about a lot of money in these markets. If you believe, you can go on there and you can make money yourself if you think these are wrong. But you can make a lot of money if you predict Chitterelli and he actually wins. Let me give you a couple more here. California Democrat, this is Prop 50. Public Policy Institute has it at 56-43. This is the redistricting thing. So again, looks like that one's going to pass. The Berkeley Institute has it at 60-38. So it does seem like that one is going to pass. And the prediction markets think the same thing. Predicted has it at a 96 or 98% chance of going through. There's an interesting one on Polymarket that says, what is the margin that will happen? And people in the market believe it is going to be a 20-30 point margin. That's the top one, about a 50% chance of that happening. A 10 to 20% margin, that's 40%. So they're thinking about 90% chance that it's going to be between 10 and 30 point margin. That is where that is falling right now in California. So it does look like they will get probably 4 to 5 more seats in California as we get closer to the midterm election. And that will be more important as we get closer, of course. Okay. All that's lots of data, lots to throw at you. There's 5 big elections. There's a bunch of stuff that other stuff that's interesting, but 5 kind of big ones that have been the focus of our coverage, at least here over the past couple of months and going into tomorrow, which is Election Day. So check that out and make sure if you're a voter, you get out there and you're not an illegal alien, you get out there and actually vote. Okay, Christian Toto has got some stuff on Hollywood. I want to bring him in next. So there's some interesting celebrity / politics intersection moments here in the last couple of days. I want to get to those in just a second. Imagine this. The day hasn't even quite started yet, right? Like the house is quiet, the light is soft. All you want from the day is, you know, something that feels real. And that's where Kindred Harvest steps in. They craft whole leaf teas with ingredients that you can actually see and pronounce. Nothing grounded dust, nothing artificial hiding behind the, you know, some phrase, natural flavor. They're just talking about honest, you know, leaves and flowers and roots and spices or whatever else goes into actual tea, the stuff that comes alive in hot water the way nature intended. Each bag is plant-based, so you're not steeping plastics or microfibers into your drink. And every blend is created and packed right here in the U.S. This is by people who care about the small details that really make a difference. From bright, citrusy blends that can wake you up in the morning, to warm grounding teas that help you unwind at night, Kindred Harvest turns an ordinary cup into something meaningful. Not just about hydration, it's about slowing down, reconnecting, and letting one quiet minute remind you that the day is still yours. Stop trusting China with your family's health. Choose American quality. Choose Kindred Harvest, cultivating goodness daily. It's kindredharvest.co. This is where you order the stuff. Kindredharvest.co. Use the code STU, get 20% off right now. Kindredharvest.co. The promo code is STU.
Unsere Empfehlung für deinen Podcast? Frisches Obst und knackiges Gemüse von Aldi. Immer gut, immer günstig, immer vielfältig. Kurz gesagt, frische für alle. Zum Aldi-Preis. Diese Woche Zespri Sangold Kiwi. Das Stück für nur 55 Cent. Oder dunkle Tafeltrauben. 500 Gramm für nur 1,79 Euro. Entdecke jetzt viele weitere Angebote in deiner Aldi-Nord-Filiale. Und weiter geht's. Einfach lauschen und genießen. Aldi. Gutes für alle.
I want to bring in Christian Toto, film critic and host of the Hollywood in Toto podcast. Christian, welcome to the program. Appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming back on. I had a few Hollywood issues I needed to suss out with somebody, and I'm glad you're here for me.
I'm your man.
Let me start with Jennifer Lawrence first. Let me give you these comments. This is from an interview, I think, with the New York Times. She's talking about her political activism. And here's the exchange. The reporter asks, you've been politically outspoken in the past. In the first Trump administration, you had a lot to say. I'm curious about how you feel about speaking out now. And Jennifer Lawrence responds, I don't really know if I should. During the first Trump administration, I felt like I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off. But as we've learned, election after election, celebrities do not make any difference whatsoever on who people vote for. So then what am I doing? I'm just sharing my opinion on something that's not that's going to add fuel to the fire and that is ripping the country apart. I think I'm also in a complicated recalibration because I'm also an artist. I don't want to start turning people off to films that, and also to art that could change consciousness or change the world because they don't like my political opinions. I want to protect my craft so that you can still get lost in what I'm doing. And I was reading that, and I, you know, of course, as conservatives, you know, any Hollywood celebrity that speaks out about anything like this, it's our job to basically bash them on it. But I actually kind of like those comments. You know, it's she's seemingly learning something. And I don't know, that's learning something important. Like, hey, yeah, we want to get lost in your role. We want to come see your movies. We don't want to hear your politics. And you're not making a difference anyway, so why not step away? Should we feel good about this or bad?
Good, mostly good. Listen, it's self-awareness 101. We don't expect that a lot. We don't see it a lot from Hollywood. So you have to give her a lot of credit. And she is dialing down on something that is really important. When you go to a movie, you want to get lost in the experience. You don't want to think, oh, that's Sean Penn. He's a bleepity bleep because he thinks about this or he says something about that. And that's the way it's always been. Now, you know, great art and great artists can kind of make us forget all the silly things they often say. But so I think those are good statements. One of the problems I have with her is that in the full breadth of the interview, she still has a hair on fire attitude toward the president when we've had 4+ years now and the world, last time I checked, has not ended. So, you know, I think a little humility in that front would be welcome as well. But, you know, also acknowledging the fact that what celebrities say, it just doesn't move the needle anymore. And, you know, so I guess if she did move the needle, she'd keep on talking, and it doesn't. And listen, celebrities are overexposed, and there's lots of different cultural reasons why they don't really matter in this regard. But again, this is not a typical celebrity interview. And, I, you know, she's, I guess, mid-30s now. She's a mom. She's getting a little bit older, a little bit wiser. So for the most part, I have to give her a lot of credit.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, she seems like somewhat likable compared to everybody else in Hollywood, even though she's, you know, crazy liberal. But I think this is kind of like the best I could hope for out of this, right? Like, you know, I don't expect everybody to be some conservative icon that's out there. Everyone's not going to be, Nick Searcy. Right? Like, that's not what we're going to get out of Hollywood. We're going to get a lot of liberals. We know that. And, like, I kind of like the idea that we have someone here who's just at least admitting that she's not the end-all, be-all of all human opinion. And, you know, maybe just zipping it is the right move.
Yeah, you know what? If I had her in an interview one-on-one, I'd explore this more. But I'd also say, you know, part of the problem we're having here is I don't care that a Ben Affleck doesn't agree with my worldview, politically speaking. I really don't care. But if he has a honest conversation, if he can marshal the facts, if he can make some really valid points, even if I disagree with him, I'd have no negative feeling toward it. But what we see from so many celebrities is the world is ending, Trump is Hitler. I mean, it's really not well thought out. It's not mature. It's not wise. I mean, Robert De Niro is in his early 80s. And every time he talks about Trump, it's like a two-year-old. It's a tantrum. Yeah. So I think that's one thing that is often missing. And she's not really being too self-aware about is that a lot of times what they say just isn't smart or thoughtful or good or helpful. That doesn't serve anyone.
You know, Jennifer, if you just were less dumb, we'd be fine with your opinion. No, I mean, I mean,
she's bubbled. That's all it is. I mean, she's not getting any information from outside sources. So she thinks the world is ending.
Yeah. And, I totally disagree with her opinions on this stuff. But like, I think it is some, at least there's self-awareness there, which is pretty rare. Have you thought, Christian, at all about why this doesn't work anymore? Like, I feel like there was a time where a big celebrity endorsement for a politician would move the needle a little bit. I remember people being all worried about Taylor Swift. She first came out in Tennessee or wherever it was and endorsed somebody and they lost. And she was going now. Everyone was wondering, is she going to come out and endorse, you know, Kamala? Yeah. Like, at the end of the day, they really aren't effective. They don't move the needle. But they do move the needle with drinks and clothing and everything else in our life. Like, celebrities do make a difference. Why don't they make a difference in politics?
Well, I mean, with drinks and fashion, it's because they're glamorous and beautiful and interesting, and they've got this sort of mystique about them. So I think that translates better to fashion and culture in a certain perspective. But, you know, I think we've collectively heard, and they've kind of spinning off what I just said, the collective Hollywood voice just isn't really smart or intriguing. You know, if a Glenn Beck, if a Ben Shapiro, if a Charlie Kirk says something, they're not just saying it. They've thought about it. They've kind of given it some attention. They can craft a message which is very powerful. And a lot of these artists aren't writers and they don't have that skill. So they're just kind of sending out this blunt instrument and it doesn't work. And, you know, it's also the fact that they're everywhere now. The Hollywood stars are overexposed. We see them on social media, on The Late Show. They're everywhere, so they're less special. So when they say something, it doesn't seem as profound or interesting or even cool.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true. Let me go to another profound thinker, Billie Eilish. She was making a statement. She won some award. I don't even remember what it was, but she was upset about the billionaires that were in the room. She said, there's no need for anyone to be a billionaire. Maybe give a bunch of your money away and everything will be better. And I don't know. I mean, I look at this, Christian, and you know, what does she have? $200 million instead of a billion? Like, I mean, this is a very wealthy celebrity. She's done very well for herself. Yeah. Is it just the 9 digits that is okay and then 10 is bad? How does this work exactly?
Yeah, I mean, listen, she lacks the wisdom and the awareness that Jennifer Lawrence has. She's a very young person. She's in the bloom of success, and she thinks her thoughts are so profound that she has to share them with the world, not realizing what a billionaire does to the economy, where that money goes, how it translates. And again, she's a millionaire. I mean, you know, she doesn't need that money. She doesn't need that private jet. She doesn't need this or that. So why does she get to have it? I mean, it's a really dumb argument. But the bottom line with her is that she will never be pressed gently or otherwise from a journalist on that subject. They will never say, you know, Billy, you said this, but, you know, think about X, Y, and Z. How do you counter with that? How do you kind of rationalize that? That's never going to happen. So she has the luxury of saying quasi dumb things that haven't been really examined. And she gets away with it. And she gets a lot of attention, too. I mean, a lot of the framing of this in the media has been, you know, this powerful statement. And she's, you know, using her voice to change the world. No, she's doing no such thing. But, you know, she's getting attention. She's getting the right attention. And she gets to feel good for a day.
Yeah, I suppose that's it. You mentioned sort of the bubble thinking, right? Like, they're always in these bubbles.
Yeah.
It's one of the things, I guess, it's a blessing and a curse about being a conservative, right? Every time you have a conservative opinion, there's always people coming out in the media criticizing you, critiquing you, looking at every word that you say and pushing you. And while that is a curse at times, we felt it, I'm sure you felt it as well.
Yeah.
It's also a blessing because you sharpen your arguments. You make sure you understand what you're saying before you say it, or at least you try to. And, you know, I am bringing up this is a lead in, of course, to the exact opposite of this situation, which is The View. The View, which is a bubble in the opposite direction. They are never questioned about anything that they ever say or do, at least seem to have no awareness that any other opinion exists. We talk about Billie Eilish. Billie Eilish is Einstein compared to Joy Behar. And Behar is now out there bragging, I guess, about how The View is too scary for conservatives. You wrote a piece on this for Align on Blaze Media. This is a fascinating perspective because my thought of this is, you know, I've never heard any conservative be scared. I've seen some people who would maybe not want to go on just because they wouldn't see any value in it for them. Or more commonly, they would see some value in it for them, but The View wouldn't have them on. So what is she even talking about here?
She doesn't know. I mean, it makes herself sound noble and brave and strong, but it's absurd. I mean, once she said that on air, there were just dozens of high profile conservatives saying, me, pick me. I want to go in the show. Or I tried to go in the show and they rejected me, didn't call me back, didn't reach out to me, that kind of a thing. It's absurd. Listen, it's an extremely dumb show, and it's full of conspiracies, and it's you know, it was meant to be empowering to women back in the day, and it really just become an embarrassment to women, honestly, that this is the voice of women on TV. I mean, women are much smarter than that in general. It's a bad representation. But if you ever watch the show and there's ever sort of tension or some conflict or someone fighting back in any capacity, they get into crosstalk. They go, we have to cut to commercial. So they can't handle it. And you're absolutely right. The blessing and the curse of us is that we have to get our ideas challenged, and we have to think them through, and we've got to go back and forth and have a lot of self-doubt. Is that the right idea? Is that the right philosophy? What about this? What about that? Those are all basic, healthy functions. And what we've seen on college campuses and elsewhere is that for the left, if you challenge them, they want to shut you down. I mean, you're out. They'll drown you out, or the worst case scenario with Charlie Kirk, God bless him. But that's where we are as a society. If the left would engage in debate and have these conversations, they'd be much better off in many, many ways. Shouldn't tell them this, but it's the truth.
I think that's true. And this also goes to my long-standing theory that The View was actually secretly a plot by male chauvinists. people that just absolutely couldn't stand women at all. Like, what if we put the most annoying and dumb women possible in one show, and then everyone will turn against them? I don't know if that's happened, but I think The View, not exactly an appreciated commodity at this point.
No, it's not. It's a great theory, and it's almost too perfect a crime to actually be true. But I think that the scariest part of The View is that there are people, I call them the seals in the audience, that are just clapping away and really absorbing all this without irony, without any sort of detachment. I mean, once in a while, I'll watch the clips to kind of hate watch them. But beyond that, beyond the comic factor, there's just nothing there. And when they kicked off Meghan McCain, that was really the last time there was a really good exchange, or the possibility of an exchange. And she wasn't even a far right or a center right. I mean, she's really, you know, more neutral in her opinions at times, and they couldn't even handle that.
Yeah, no, it's been the same story since this show started. I honestly will say, to their credit, I mean, I would have never believed Joy Behar could hold down a job for this long. I mean, this is a legitimately incredible thing that the show's been on the air as long as it has. I guess if I'm in their families, I'm thrilled about it. Other than that, I don't know that anyone's happy about it. But I am happy that you wrote the piece. It's on a line, part of Blaze Media. You can get it at theblaze.com. Horror show, The View is too scary for conservatives, Bose Behar. I guess is it Marjorie Taylor Greene? I see in the picture there. Is she going on The View?
Yeah, I mean, she's been fighting the right so aggressively, they thought that she was more palatable. So they'll kind of maybe stay in that lane. Mm. We'll see what happens there. But how bad?
She's been praising subsidies for healthcare recently and saying that the conservatives are mean for making the healthcare prices go up. So now she gets the invite. That's how this works.
Yeah. It's her life's ambition to be on The View, and it's all coming true this week.
Very exciting stuff. Christian Toto, film critic, host of the Hollywood in Toto podcast. Christian, we'll read the piece, and thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you.
Meditieren, Yoga, Joggen, nichts entspannt mich.
Echt? Mich entspannt meine Steuer total.
Steuer? Wie Finanzamt? Die Steuererklärung?
Ja, ich habe ganz locker über 1000 Euro zurückbekommen.
Hast du geheime Connections?
Nö, nur die Wieso-Steuer-App.
Wow, und das ist einfach?
Klar, die macht fast alles automatisch.
Plötzlich fühle ich mich so entspannt.
Hol dir dein Geld zurück. Tiefenentspannt mit Wieso-Steuer.
Government shutdown could become the longest ever, as Trump says he will not be extorted by Democrats. How dare he? He's supposed to allow the extortion. That is essentially what the media's position is, by the way. Yeah, they want a policy. He should just give it to them. Now, this was never the case when conservatives wanted a policy. Of course, it was always just their fault, and they were holding up the nation at gunpoint. This is a situation where the opposite is true. The person being robbed is the one who is the is not the victim of the story. It's the person with the gun that's the victim. So remember that. In this particular case. Now, we do have some interesting stuff out of the Caribbean. An alleged drug vessel has been hit yet again, 3 killed in the latest one of these drone strikes on ships. They said 3 male narco terrorists were aboard the vessel. All 3 terrorists were killed. No U.S. forces were harmed. Well, thank God for that. 64 is the number now of people who've been killed in these strikes. I will say, I understand the moral justification for killing drug dealers. I understand the theoretical strategic justification for it. Certainly sends a message. The legal justification for it is a little hazy right now. And in fact, to the point where Republican senators are saying, hey, can you give us what at least your justification is so we can try to judge it? Right. And so far, the Trump administration has not turn that information over, at least to the satisfaction of these senators. So, I mean, it would be just, I think this would be something that would be probably helpful for everyone to understand and know and be able to judge. Now, part of this, of course, is just, you know, he wants Maduro out. He's wanted Maduro out since the first term. You know, even if you talk to John Bolton, Bolton basically said, yeah, we led a coup in Maduro. Didn't wind up working in Venezuela on Maduro. Didn't wind up working. But he's cared about this since the first term when he had Bolton with him. Now he hates Bolton and he still cares about it. Here he is talking about Maduro.
On Venezuela in particular, are Maduro's days as president numbered?
I would say, yeah. I think so, yeah.
And this issue of potential land strikes in Venezuela, is that true?
I don't tell you that. I mean, I'm not saying it's true or untrue, but I wouldn't be inclined to say that I would do that. But because I don't talk to a reporter about whether or not I'm going to strike.
I love this. That was half the interview, by the way. Her just saying, hey, why don't you tell us things that a president should never tell people? And then he would say, I'm not going to tell you that. That was basically the interview, if you did not see it. But it is an interesting moment. He's taking a very aggressive stance with Venezuela. Certainly Rubio is a big fan of that. Hegseth seems to be a big fan of that as well. A lot of that I kind of have a lot of sympathy for, frankly. Of course, you know, certainly would prefer not getting anywhere near a war with them. If that's at all possible. Democrats are bracing for Nancy Pelosi's possible retirement. I found this story interesting largely because it just shows what a zilch Hakeem Jeffries is. Like, Nancy Pelosi doesn't even have a leadership role in this party anymore. Like, Hakeem Jeffries has her old job, and he's so inconsequential. No one even talks about him. They're worried about whether Pelosi, at 85 years old, might not rerun for the 914th term. It's just amazing how pathetic the entire party is, but really Hakeem Jeffries specifically. And finally, federal agents allegedly seen wearing horror and toy masks in Los Angeles County. And you look at that and you're like, gosh, wow, they really are doing terrible things. What are they, you know, arresting people with a Scream mask, a Jason mask? Well, no, there's not even an accusation of that. It was just Halloween. So, you know, some of these guys had these masks on. There's no allegations they were arresting people with these masks. One of them was a Chucky mask. Can you imagine being arrested by Chucky? That would be disturbing, but does not seem to have occurred in any way. In fact, there's not even an accusation that it occurred. It's just that they were seen wearing the masks on Halloween. So, you know, will the tyranny of the Trump administration ever stop? There's a certain peace of mind that comes from knowing you're, you know, prepared. And that's what Jace Medical helps you achieve. They make it simple to get a personal emergency supply of prescription medication so that when you're left vulnerable, you're not left vulnerable. Like if there's a supply chain issue or just life in general, travel throws you a curveball, you are prepared for it. With Jace, you just fill out a quick online form, consult with a licensed physician, and if approved, your prescribed medications arrive right at your door, packaged, labeled, and ready to go. It's the same medicine you'd get from your pharmacy, just set aside for emergencies. And they even offer, in Jace's case, a compact travel-ready kit that covers common emergency antibiotics and the Jace Daily program, which helps you build a backup supply of your ongoing prescriptions. Because the truth is, we don't ever get to plan for emergencies after they happen. We plan before they do. And Jace Medical makes that possible, affordably, legally, and responsibly. It's a small step that could really make all the difference when the unexpected comes calling at your door. The Jace case is available at jace.com. If you enter the promo code STEW, you get a discount. Why not do that? Don't you want the discount? You want to pay full price? No, you want to pay the discounted price. Use that code STU at jace.com, jase.com. It's jace.com. The code is STU. Okay, so here's what happened. I would sometimes maybe try to mislead you about where a certain story occurred, but I really can't on this one. It happened in France. It's the most French story I've ever heard of in my entire life. Happened in the Cévennes province. A guy goes to the store to buy some supplies, and he decides to ride his bike back. Now, he might be allegedly a bit inebriated when he's riding the bike. And, you know, that's not easy to do. You don't want to drink and drive. You certainly don't want to bike and drive, especially biking and driving in this region, which this is what it looks like. I mean, you're talking about rock, this terrain, very rocky, cliffs all over the place. Well, shockingly, he careened off the cliff and fell 130 feet. Now, he was, of course, disabled at the end. How did he stay alive? Well, he was yelling for people to help him for days and days and days and days. But he was able to survive because the only thing he had from the entire shopping trip that happened to fall near him, that was his red wine. The entire shopping trip was for more wine, which he then survived for multiple days on. The most French story of all time. Okay, issue 4 of Blaze Media's Frontier magazine is available now. Get it at blazeunlimited.com/stew. blazeunlimited.com/stew. Use the code Frontier40 and get $40 off.